was a mutt. Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block, I'm walking that walk I walk. When I spy me a pretty tip, I said it's time to go talk my talk. Said I like that ribbon in your hair and the way you wag your tail. Take a look at me now, baby, 'cause I'm your alpha male. Well, she said I was kinda cute, doing those things I do. Then she up and asked me, she said, dog, what breed are you? I told her mama was a mutt, daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything you can use. She said all my men are purebred, registered AKC. I said I could have been one too, I just refused to pay the fee. Yeah, you purebreds, you think you're special. With your noses in the air, I got no leash on you. Go find someone who cares. Now she's naming all our puppies, rearranging my place. Guess that's what they mean when they say, welcome to the dog race. So come on, little puppies, I'm taking a walk. I gotta teach you how to shake your butt. Gotta teach you how to talk.
Ooh. Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Hi everyone, welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer.
Fazio, owner of the Dog Super Nanny and My Best Friend Dog Training. Rini and I are dedicated to educating you, the dog owning community, about why your dogs do the things they do. We want you to have a long-lasting and trusting relationship with your dog, so we make sure to bring you information each week to ensure you'll be a well-informed pet parent to your companion pet. Our show airs every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30, right here on WNJC 1360 AM. If this is the first time you're listening, you can catch up and listen to any or all of our previous programs by going to Rini's website at www.jerseydogtrainer.com, or you can go to my website, www.mybestfrienddogschool.com. You'll see a list of podcasts with identifying topics to make it easy for you to select which show you would be most interest to you. Click on the podcast link, sit back, relax, and listen and learn. Our guest this morning is Jim Grant, who is the senior editor of Sports Illustrated and author of the book called The Lost Dogs, Michael Vick's Dogs and Their Tale of Rescue and Redemption. In his book, Jim tells the incredible story about how an investigation uncovered Michael Vick's dog-fighting compound in Surry County, Virginia, how they discovered shallow burial areas for dogs that were killed there, and what happened to the 47 dogs that survived. Before we speak to Jim Grant, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant in the Keyport, New Jersey area and its surrounding towns.
Are you the owner of a fearful or aggressive dog and don't know where to turn? Have you called other trainers and they've turned you down because they don't want to deal with an aggression case? Then My Best Friend Dog Training and its special service, the Dog Super Nanny, is maybe just what you're looking for. We do in-home private consultations. We're located in Keyport, New Jersey, and we do travel. Our phone number is 732-533-9376, and our website is mybestfrienddogschool.com. We are positive-based trainers and don't use physical punishment or fear as a way to motivate your dog. We use games and fun as a way to do that, and we also help you during the whole process. So give us a call. We're here for you. 732-533-9376.
Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. Good morning, Jim, and thank you so much for joining us here in the Doghouse today.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
We have several questions for you, and Karen and I are going to kind of rotate them around. Michael Vick has become a superhero to sports fans, especially in this area, since he plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. Do you think his appearances on behalf of the Humane Society of America help that organization to reach a new audience?
Well, they do. I mean, the Humane Society certainly feels that way. I know Wayne Pisanel, the president, has said that he thinks that these are very useful for them and very helpful. And I certainly hope that's true. It's part of the thing with Michael Vick being so public is that it's a constant reminder of, that dog fighting is out there and that it's something that needs to be dealt with. So it may not be the ideal scenario, and it may rub a lot of people the wrong way, but it's sort of the reality that we have now, so we're just trying to make the best out of it and use it to do some good.
Do you think that he's able to convince children at a very young and impressionable age now that this is not something that is a good thing to do, rather than having these children grow up thinking of what he did and using that as a role model?
Well, I hope so. That's the idea. And, I have not attended any of his talks, but I'm told that he does a decent job at them. One person told me a story that they were at one of his appearances, and as he was walking off, there were a group of people there who sort of were shouting to him, and they said, "Michael, you got a bad deal. You didn't do anything wrong." Mm-hmm. And as he's walking out, and he stopped, and he walked over them, and he said, "No, I did do something wrong." That certainly was something he didn't have to do.
Right.
So, I can't swear that that's true. That's something I heard secondhand. But, if he's taking it to that level, then hopefully he is sincere and is doing good, I hope.
I hope so, too. Karen, you have a question for Jim?
Yeah. Do you think that Vic's punishment fit the crime? Or do you think he was treated unfairly or prosecuted because he was already famous?
I don't think he was treated unfairly. I think anybody who was caught doing what he was doing at the level he was doing it would have been prosecuted. I think his fame played a role in it and how much attention was paid and how it all played out, both to his advantage and disadvantage, probably. There were a lot of people who were happy to overlook it because of who he was, and there were people who were, more adamant that something be done because of who he was. So I think that cut both ways for him as celebrity. But what it did in a larger sense is definitely made it an issue, and it definitely brought it to attention, as we were saying earlier. Dog fighting is something that didn't just start happening. It's been going on for years and years, and it was sort of ignored and existed in the shadows. So, Michael Vick's arrest really brought it to light and has changed the way it's perceived, and it's changed the way it's investigated and prosecuted, and really, in a law enforcement point of view, it's become much more popular to investigate these dogfighting rings because they realize now that they're popular cases, you can get a conviction, and also that there are other kinds of crime that are going on there. When you bust a dogfight, you find drug traffickers and gun traffickers, and so dogfighting is sort of a gateway crime that by stomping at that, you stomp out other types of crime. So it's changed that right off the bat, and that's all for the better.
I have a question for you, too. With all the publicity about his dog fighting ring and the dogs that were found abandoned, do you think that after people heard about the abusive way that those dogs were treated, do you think that people now look at pit bull, view pit bulls a little differently than they may have before? Or do you think that there still might be a prejudice toward that breed?
Well, I think there's still a huge prejudice toward the breed. Obviously, there's already a number of cities in this country that ban them, and there's more and more considering it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, this has started to turn the tide. I mean, I think this was, perception-wise, the first time that pit bulls and fighting dogs were viewed as victims in a dog fighting ring rather than as part of the crime.
Right.
So that perception has started to change a little bit, and I think hopefully people that have read the book, there's a lot of sort of evidence and information in there about the breed that would hopefully change minds, or at least open your mind a little bit to the idea that in the end, these are just dogs, and like any dog, they can be good or bad, and a lot of it depends on, how they're socialized and how they're treated and how they're managed, so...
Right.
They're at the end of the day, every dog is just a dog, and you have to look at them as individuals. You could say some general things about one breed or another breed, but each dog, regardless of the breed, is an individual, and you have to take it as such.
You know, I have to tell you, Jim, I read your book cover to cover, and I couldn't put it down, I have some more questions for you a little later, but I just was amazed at the treatment that those dogs had to undergo. And each dog that was just talked about in your book was like a different character, and the way you portrayed everything, it was fascinating. It was heartbreaking. You had times that you felt elation at something wonderful happened to a particular dog. It was just everything from soup to nuts there. So I have to tell you, you wrote a wonderful, wonderful book, and I hope everybody gets it. Karen, do you have a question?
Well, I just want to get back to the book just a little bit now that we're on the topic. I mean, we're talking about, people that are either, engaging in this in this disgusting sport, that they know they can be convicted, they know it's a crime. And we've seen on TV and heard in the news reports about the abusive way the animals were treated, but I have to say that, as a professional trainer and one who is familiar with this kind of treatment, even I was just, there were times reading this book where I just sat there with my mouth open. It's really a beautiful investigative piece of work, Jim. You did a great job. And I think that anybody listening out there that really wants to know how horrendous this is. It's not just dogs fighting. I mean, dogs were hanged. Dogs were drowned by putting their heads in buckets until they couldn't breathe anymore. I mean, horrendous, horrendous treatment. Animals were just tossed into, after they were drowned and they died, they were just tossed into a bucket. I mean, it was, we don't treat rats in New York City that we poison and destroy as bad as these dogs were treated. I mean, I don't think any animal on the planet gets treated as bad as these dogs were treated. And the book is a marvelous piece of investigative and reporting work. I mean, every detail from how the compound was found, how it was formed, the people that played parts in it, what their names were, where they grew up, their families. I mean, you name it, it's in this book. So, I mean, if you sat back, you watched ABC and NBC and all the television interviews and Vic going in and out of court, man, that was Walt Disney compared to what really went on. And I really encourage anybody, even if you don't have a dog, anybody who is even considering this sport or has an interest in it, I mean, read this book first, because it will blow you away. I mean, if you don't walk away completely disgusted, I don't even care if you engage in the sport, if you don't walk away from this book completely disgusted, then you are a dysfunctional and damaged human being.
Jim, let me ask you a question here. When you were doing your investigation to be able to write this book, were you right there? Did you follow the follow everybody around to see what they were doing? Were you on the property itself?
I did visit the property. I wrote the book, it was sort of 2 years after everything had happened. You know, this was well after the fact.
I see.
So okay. I was not present, you know, for any of the actual goings on there or the immediate aftermath.
Okay.
I sort of stumbled onto the story about a year after Michael Vick had pled guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And I originally wrote an article in Sports Illustrated, and then the article turned into a book.
Right.
So it was written, you know, several years after Michael Vick was actually arrested.
I see.
And it was all sort of pieced together by going back and going through a lot of documentation and talking to a lot of people. And you know, one of the things about, like you're saying, it does detail sort of the uglier side of dogfighting, and I thought that was necessary, A, so people really know what's going on at these things, but also to get a sense, because in the end what it does is it tells the stories of the dogs. I mean, maybe the first third is about the investigation,
right,
but most of it is really dedicated to these dogs and the process of rehabilitating them and what they go through and how they emerge at the end a lot of very happy endings. But in order to appreciate those happy endings, you have to understand where they started out. And
right.
So it was important to get some of those ugly details in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, try to keep them brief. They're there. But if I know a lot of people who are real dog lovers, they have a hard time with that. And, you know, I don't want anyone to be scared off to think I can't read a book like that. You know, you skip a few paragraphs here and there if you're queasy, but it's not as bad, you know,
right,
not unreadable, I hope.
It's a wonderful book.
Without making it so scary that people would stay away.
So have you talked to the people who have taken these dogs in to rehabilitate them? Have you met some of the people who have adopted the dogs?
Oh, yeah, many of them.
Really? That's great. That's good. So when you've met the dogs themselves?
Many of them, not all of them, but many, yeah. And you know, that was the other great thing about, you know, when I wrote the original article, you could tell a small snippet of the story, but doing the book, writing The Lost Dogs, was really a chance to tell in great detail, you know, those stories about those people, because that's one of the most impressive things is, you know, they're so committed and so passionate and work
absolutely
so hard and,
I know,
you know, on a daily basis to help these dogs recover from the damage that's been done, and that, you know, that's very gratifying to be able to share with the world, you know, how hard those people work to do what they do and to help those animals.
Hey, Jim, I have a question. As someone who became involved in telling this story, how do you personally feel about Michael Vick's current situation as a superhero and how he'll be making, you know, $100 million, you know, this year? I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel like, you know,
I have mixed emotions about it, you know.
Mixed
emotions about it. I'm sort of, you know, I tend to believe in the criminal justice system. You commit a crime, you get caught, you get a punishment, you know, you serve it, you know.
Right.
And beyond that, what are you supposed to do then? Go live in a hole, you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, you know. But if I'm interested to find out, you know, it's always interesting to find out how the author feels, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I try and separate it too. You know, the guy is obviously a very talented football player, and that's a remarkable skill. But throwing 100 touchdown passes doesn't make up for killing one dog, you know.
Right.
The way a lot of people last year were talking about redemption for Michael Vick, but, you know, playing good football does not redeem you. You know, you redeem yourself by doing that work with the Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
He recently testified in favor of this anti-dogfighting law. And by, you know, dedicating yourself to try and help solve the problem, which hopefully he's doing, you know, and that's how he redeems himself for his off-the-field stuff. The on-the-field stuff is totally separate. You know, that's about, you know, doing a job and doing it well. Apparently he did last year, but, you know, it has nothing to do with the off-the-field stuff.
Jim, your book won the Humane Society's Genesis Award for magazine writing. Can you please let our listeners know where they can purchase your book, The Lost Dogs?
Oh, sure. You know, as they say, anywhere that books are sold, Amazon, online and also at BarnesandNoble.com and the Barnes & Noble stores. Any bookstore should have it or be able to get it pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for visiting with us. Karen and I appreciate your taking this time out with us, and thank you very much for writing the book, because I just think it's a wonderful book and it's very enlightening all the way around. And good luck to you. And again, thank you very much. We appreciated it.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thank you, Jen.
You have a great day.
Thank
you, listeners. We're going to continue on with our discussion. First, please let me tell you what services I offer here in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and certified dog behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Renee Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. We just had a very interesting discussion with the author of The Lost Dogs. His name is Jim Grant. If you guys love dogs, and I certainly would imagine you do since you're listening to us, whether you like pit bulls or not, I think that The Lost Dogs book is so eye-opening, not just about the way dog fighters run their businesses, if you want to talk about a business, but it's eye-opening about the dogs themselves and about how people can get together and work so hard to get these dogs rehabilitated. Karen, do you ever watch the show that comes from Utah?
Dogtown?
The Dogtown.
I do. And, you know, Best Friends Animal Society had a big role in this.
Yeah.
Rehabilitating these dogs.
Right.
And they're positive trainers like you and I. And they have satellite groups all over the United States, and one is right out of the Monmouth County SPCA,
mm-hmm.
And other areas. They're all certified trainers, and, you know, it's just, Dogtown is great. I just hope it comes back on the air, this fall, because it really gives a chance for people to see how wounded emotionally some animals can be, and how they could be rehabilitated. And many dogs are, you know, experience the same thing as Michael Vick's dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But I had gone off on a rant a little bit before about the book. But really, I think the most important part of this book is not so much about how the dogs fought. Because I think when people think about dog fighting, they just think of dogs fighting and one killing another.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much deeper than that. I mean, there's a lot that happens that these handlers do to these dogs to make them want to kill. They starve them, they torture them, they beat them, they frighten them,
mm.
they chain them up, they hang them. I mean, the things that the dog fighting, to me, that's nothing compared to what the animals go through before and after
mm-hmm.
the dog fight.
The treatment
the dog fight doesn't really last all that long. I mean, it could last hours, you know, but
yeah.
most of them don't. But, I mean, it's the way these dogs were treated. I mean,
Karen, one of the dogs that broke my heart, and I can't remember the dog's name, Michael Vick actually, you know, the investigators had to prove that Michael Vick had his personal hands into this activity.
How could they not know he had it?
Well, they have to prove it. They had to prove it.
On page 53 of the book, which is where the photos come in, and there are photos in this book, you see Michael Vick's beautiful house, his swimming pool, and you see hundreds of sheds. I mean, you can't miss this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell me this guy lived here and said, oh, I had no idea this was going on in my yard. Come on.
Right, right.
There were, like, airplane hangar buildings in the back of this guy's house.
Yeah.
How do you not know that's not there?
But those people who are listening who might be wanting to defend Michael Vick, Michael Vick, there was one dog in particular that they were talking about that Vick was so ticked off with because the dog did not win. He took that dog and had a partner, and these people slammed this dog down on the ground until it was dead. And from what it sounded like, it took almost forever for the dog to actually expire. But by the time they saw the remains of the dog, she had crushed ribs, she had a crushed skull. I mean, every bone in her body was broken. How can you do that? And here, see, I watch Michael Vick play now. I mean, I get kind of fascinated with his style because he is truly a talented football player.
Right.
I had a hard time watching him in the beginning. My husband's an avid football fan. And I started to watch it because I would pray every game that they would lose. Honestly, even now I'm not really comfortable with the fact that he's such a superhero because I keep thinking in the back of my mind he had this in him to be able to torture these animals and get his personal hands involved in doing that.
Well, you know what? It's relative. It's like I would imagine that as a sports figure engaged in a horrendous sport like this,
mm-hmm.
he just sees it as a sport.
Yeah.
You know, just like anybody sees a race horse racing as a sport,
mm-hmm.
or dog sledding or any kind of sport that involves an animal, they see it as a sport. But what I don't get, I can't even tell you neurologically what happens to a mammal's brain when it's forced to fight, when it wants to flee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a whole other subject.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you take an animal and just beat it up like that?
I don't know.
The humane thing to do, I'm not condoning this in any way, but just put a bullet through its head and get it over with.
Sure,
I mean, if you're looking to call out the weak ones from this sport, I mean, why would you do such a horrendous abuse? Why wouldn't you adopt the dog out? It's psychosis. I mean, these people are suffering from psychosis, and
right.
they're like,
it's a different culture. I mean, when you I would imagine that Michael Vick grew up in a situation where maybe his relatives or maybe friends of his family were involved in this sport, and he just grew up with it. But that's not excusable, because when you mature, you start to learn right from wrong. There have been studies, many, many studies that indicate any child that abuses an animal can be very, very prone to abusing people and children when they get older. So
actually, most serial killers
were animal abusers.
Were animal abusers as children or adolescents.
Definitely. So,
almost everyone.
So I am praying that when Michael Vick goes to events with the Humane Society, that these children, that he's catching these children at a young enough age so that if they are going to use him as a role model, that they see what he's doing now. But I pray that he doesn't slip, because I feel that anybody who is so involved in an activity like this is kind of like an addict.
Mm-hmm.
We saw things break apart with O.J. Simpson,
mm-hmm.
with his abusive, situation. And, I think that Casey Anthony is probably going to do something in the future, because this is just part of her temperament, if you want to call it that, if Michael Vick can keep his nose clean, and if he stays busy with football, hopefully he'll keep his nose clean. But God forbid if he has any type of time, too much time on his hands, or he gets involved with the wrong people again, there's a weakness there. And I think
This is completely kind of off topic, but it's still related. I'm a big football fan. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand somebody like Plaxico Burress, who shoots himself in the foot with his own gun.
Right.
How does he get to do the same amount of time as somebody who committed horrendous crimes against living things?
I don't know.
How does that?
There's a lot of inequality in our justice system.
How does that work?
System. I don't know.
I don't understand that.
Me either.
Unbelievable.
Well, yeah. So, Karen, we have other interviews planned for this month, and there are going to be good ones. We have some you want to tell us about next week? I think we have Roger Abrantes.
Yeah, Roger Abrantes is going to be joining us on September 15th.
And who is he, Karen?
Has a PhD in evolutionary biology.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the author of the Encyclopedia of Canine Body Language.
Wow.
Which is a marvelous book with tons of illustrations for anybody that wants to learn dog language,
mm-hmm.
Especially the silent body language, which makes up about 80% of their language.
Right.
It's just an incredible piece of work, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time, and I'm getting the signal from my engineer, and there's Duke reminding us, too, that we have to go. I hope everybody, became more aware of this situation by listening to our program, and I invite everybody to join us next week on Thursday in the Doghouse, right here on WNJC, 1360 AM. Karen, have a great day.
And
I hope our listeners have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block, I'm walking that walk I walk. When I spy me a pretty chair, I said it's time to go talk my talk. Said I like that ribbon in your hair, and the way you wag your tail. Take a look at me now, baby, 'cause I'm your alpha male. Well, she said I was kinda cute, doing those things I do. Then she up and asked me, she said, dog, what breed are you? I told her mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything you can use. Said all my men are purebred, registered AKC. I said I could have been one too, I just refused to pay the fee.